What's better than this? Guys, being dudes here on the Draft Dudes podcast, presented by Locked On. It's Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs from the Draft Network, and we are your hosts here on this Wednesday edition of the show. I guess we're going to call it Water Cooler Wednesday today. We've got a variety of topics to dig into. Kyle, happy Wednesday to you.
Thanks, man. Any idea what that was that I just popped?
Well, it's 8:07 a.m. You've been awake since 5:15.
Yep.
You don't drink water.
Correct.
Well, it was a can.
Water doesn't come in carbonated cans anyway.
Yeah, but I don't think you're drinking soda at 8:07. I think it's like a can of like, I'm going to go with a crazy guess of like Nesquik or something like that.
It is not Nesquik.
Some type of V8 juice.
No.
You're drinking soda?
It's a sugar-free Red Bull.
Oh, all right. Yeah, I should have thought that.
8:07 a.m. Getting ready for a long day of grinding tape. I got Andrew Thomas on the docket today, Joe.
How many cups of coffee have you had today?
One.
So it was three hours into your day. And you've had a cup of coffee and you're on a Red Bull now.
Yeah. I've got to have an injection of caffeine every 3 or 4 hours.
What'd you have for breakfast?
I haven't eaten yet.
Really?
I haven't had time. Been too busy working.
All right. Imagine that.
I'm so disgusted by these Pro Bowl rosters that I'm not in the mood to eat.
All right. So what's your biggest gripes? I have three biggest gripes written down.
How is Dante Hightower on this roster?
That's terrible. That's absolutely terrible.
It is offensively bad for Dante Hightower, who plays a really specific role with the Patriots, and that's fine. You know, that's what good coaches do. They put their players in the best positions to succeed. Dante Hightower has 60 tackles this year, 4 sacks, 9 QB hits, and 7 tackles for loss. 0 impact in the passing game. Meanwhile, you got Joe Schobert over in Cleveland with 120 tackles, 13 passes defensed, and 4 picks, and he didn't make the Pro Bowl in favor of a downhill 2-down thumper. It's bullshit.
I mean, I think Schobert is a better choice. Obviously, I would love to have seen
Tremaine Edmonds.
Yeah, like
Jerome Baker. Jerome Baker's got more tackles than Trey Edmonds does this year. Bet you didn't know that.
Who was that?
Jerome Baker.
Well, I mean, he plays a lot more snaps, man. You know, you'd expect that.
Very funny, Joe.
You're dumb. Jayen Brown would have been a better choice if we want to get like non-our teams. Even Jamie Collins with his own team is a better linebacker than Deonta Hightower. Well,
and that's why the first place I went was Joe Schobert, because I'm not turning this into like a homer fest here, but it's like you look at Dante Hightower's like not in the top 100 players as far as tackles go this year.
He's not in the top 100? Is that a real number you just said?
I'm going to double check. I looked at it this morning because one of the things I wrote for USA Today when I did Dolphins coverage this morning was who are the biggest snubs for the Dolphins? And okay. So he's not in the top 50. He's not in the top 100 as a middle linebacker. Dante Hightower is tied for 111th in the NFL in tackles this year.
Do you know who I think's been awesome at linebacker this year and nobody's talking about it?
Darius Leonard?
Nope, that's not who I was thinking of.
Who?
Alexander Johnson with Denver. Formerly known as A.J. Johnson, he was a linebacker at Tennessee that was dismissed for kind of getting tied together in some legal stuff. Dude, he got acquitted of all that stuff, and he has been amazing for Denver. Actually playing really good in space. He's been amazing, like, as a run defender. He's been a lights out tackler. Like, he's been a much better space player than I've ever thought he would be. And he's cooking in Fangio's defense. Like, he legit, I'll be honest with you, like, I'd probably even say more than Tremaine, I think, deserves to be in there over Hightower. So Alexander Johnson needs some love for the season he's putting together.
Well, the two names that stood out to me is, like, how did these nice guys not get the call was Joe Schober and then Zach Cunningham at Houston.
Brand guy for me, Zach Cunningham.
Yeah, I know that's a guy you're a big fan of. He's third in the NFL in tackles right now, Joe. 133 with two games to play.
Who leads? I couldn't tell you who leads the league in tackles right now. Who is it? Since I know you have that information in front of you.
Blake Martinez currently leads the NFL in tackles. Hey, speaking of brands, the top two defenders in the NFL in solo tackles right now, Zach Cunningham with 93. Mm-hmm. Good for your brand. Buda Baker, 92 solo tackles, is second best in the NFL. That's great for my brand.
Well, it lines up with the tape. Good tackler in college, man.
So, what are the Pro Bowl stuff? I know we don't want to dedicate too much time to the Pro Bowl here, yeah. But the Dont'a Hightower stuff had me triggered this morning. I'm like, he is probably like the 12th best option for AFC middle linebackers, and he got one of two spots.
Right. Okay, so I had Hightower down. That was number one. And then I think there were two other notable snubs, and everyone's going to think I'm a Denver Broncos homer today, but Justin Simmons, how does that guy not get in? I mean, he's been lights out in coverage. He's making plays in the ball. He's tackling. He's part of a good defense. And I thought he definitely had, you know, had a case to be in there. And the other guy is Dak Prescott. I thought he deserved to get in there over Aaron Rodgers, to be completely honest with you. Dak's having a great year. And I don't know how he doesn't get in. So the Hightower, Justin Simmons being left out, and Dak Prescott being left out were my three biggest gripes with, you know, a Pro Bowl system that's scrutinized every year. So this is just kind of part of it.
Hold on, I might have another one here.
Another snub that you're hot about?
Yeah.
Well, while you're looking at it, go ahead.
Do you know what Logan Ryan's done this year?
He's having a good season.
So Logan Ryan this year has 102 total tackles right now as a corner, mind you, and has paired that with 3.5 sacks, 4 interceptions, 21 passes defensed, and 4 forced fumbles. Did make the Pro Bowl.
Let me see is he getting toasted in coverage or something? I'm going to look up his passer rating that he's allowing.
Yeah, I know tackle numbers for corners are kind of weird because then it's like, okay, are you just getting cooked in coverage? But 21 passes defensed is really good.
Yeah, so he's given up a passer rating of 99.7 against his coverage, a reception percentage of 70%. 12.4 yards per reception. He's given up 6 touchdowns. So I think he's giving and taking away. It's kind of
okay, and that's fine.
Yeah.
And I know Marcus Peters has played well since he got to Baltimore, but like that's the MO on Marcus Peters and always has been.
Yeah. Yeah, Peters is playing really well since he's been to Baltimore, but I mean, I guess you could maybe argue the amount of time he's been there. I mean, Casey Hayward's having a good year in the AFC. Trey White and Stephon Gilmore, obvious starters, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, they each have 6 picks, and they're the top two in the NFL in passes defense this year.
And they're top two in the NFL in opponent passer rating. So they're just not giving up shit.
Right.
Guys are stud. Couple Bills draft picks there. So one other quick side note, because I'm still thinking about Alexander Johnson. Have you thought about the amount of UDFA players from Tennessee that are like filling big roles in the NFL right now?
It's almost like coaching matters.
Yeah, it's a big, this would be like the banner child for this situation. Like AJ Johnson, Emmanuel Mosley in San Francisco is having a big year. Shy Tuttle, Kyle Phillips, all these guys were like UDFAs from Tennessee. Yeah. And they're like
came in as really good prospects and just didn't develop at all because the coaching at Tennessee has been trash for, but you know, they're winners in life. you know,
and they're good. Those are good football players in the NFL, and they couldn't even get drafted. So that's something to be mindful of. I guess kind of speaking to recruiting and player development. Listen, it's National Signing Day, and Yahoo did a piece this morning that's pretty thought-provoking. Talked about two different things here. First of all, that it's National Signing Day. Rivals.com currently has 33 players in this recruiting class rated as five-star recruits. 22 of those 33 have committed to five schools. Clemson has six, Georgia has six, LSU has four, Ohio State has three, and Alabama has three. So you have five schools getting two-thirds of the best recruits in the nation. And you kind of take that a step further and you look at, we've now had 6 years of playoff, you know, this four team playoff structure, and only 11 different schools have been represented in those within 6 years. And so I thought it'd be kind of fun to dig into some of our thoughts on the parity that does/doesn't exist within college football, the concentration of talent, and, you know, is it good or bad? Like, where do you stand on, like, when you hear this information, Kyle, like, what does it make you think?
It's hard, right? Because how are you going to regulate who's going to sign where? Every player should have the right and the choice of where they want to go get their education, where they want to go play football. If that means you guys all want to go to the same school, so be it. And with the way recruiting has really taken off, like I guarantee you, every player that's committing to those schools is expecting to go in and win a starting job by their sophomore season and be a 3-year star. Because it's kind of just like these guys as high prized recruits are worshipped like for years. So all they've ever heard is you're the man. You're a stud. You're going to do A, B, C, X, Y, and Z. And then you get into college and it's a very different experience. And suddenly the playing field is a lot different. And I think if there was a little bit more perspective on that, you'd probably see players make decisions to go different places if playing to them was important. And it's not important to everybody. But how can you possibly regulate or tell kids where they should go or where they're allowed to, like, you can't regulate it. So how do you fix it?
I think if I wanted to be the contrarian to these talking points, I would look at these five schools and I would say, okay, Clemson before Dabo was not anything exciting. I mean, a reasonably competitive team in college football, but not elite ever. Georgia they still haven't reached the pinnacle, right, of college football, but they were kind of like teetering with a 9-10 win seasons every year under Mark Richt. LSU has been a really good football team, I think, consistently. They've had some lulls, but mostly they've been outstanding, especially since when Saban first got there, and then you got into Les Miles and now what's happening. Ohio State seems to be always good. And then Alabama before Saban was a dumpster fire for a while. So, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for these schools right now and being mindful of where they've been. It's not like they've been reigning supreme for 20 years or anything like that. They've clawed out of some circumstances that put them in here. And there has been different teams at the top. You know, you look at teams like Tennessee, Virginia Tech's been there, Florida State, you know, where are they right now? Texas, teams like that, USC. So, you know, maybe it's a little bit longer of a list of teams that are legitimately in the mix, but let's not act like this has been an overly long reign from these specific teams. They've done things within their programs in terms of finding the right coach or getting a few game-changing players to change the script and really attract that talent moving forward that other schools just haven't had. And I wish there was more competitive balance in college football, but I think that these teams should get a lot of credit for what they've done to position themselves to land these good players.
So let's wind the clock back 20 years ago. I want to have a conversation real quick. So I want to talk about the programs that were at the top of the mountain 20 years ago.
All right. I'm anxious to hear this. Do you have the information?
I have the final rankings from the 1999 season in front of me right now.
All right. It's going to be Tennessee, Nebraska.
All right. Hold on now. Tennessee finished 9-3 and was the ninth rated team in the country.
Okay. Nebraska.
Nebraska finished 12-1 and was the third best team in the country.
Okay. I'm guessing Florida State.
Florida State finished 12-0 and was the unanimous number one.
Miami.
Miami finished 9-4 as the 15th rated team in the country. Now, to your point, though, Florida State and Tennessee started the season at 1-2. Yeah. Nebraska started at 6, and Miami started at 12.
I'm guessing Florida was probably pretty high there. It's still Spurrier years.
Florida started the year at number 5 with a first place vote, and Florida finished 9-4 as the 12th best team in the country.
Michigan's up there, I'm guessing.
Michigan was 10-2 as the 5th best team in the country.
USC?
USC I do not see on here.
All right.
I don't see Ohio State in the final rankings either.
So who else? Who did I not say? Who else is up there?
Virginia Tech is the big one.
Okay, yeah.
Tech at the height of Beamer Ball was wild. they had some crazy good teams there in the late 90s, early 2000s. Wisconsin at 10-2. Kansas State 11-1.
Wow.
Penn State 10-3. Michigan State 10-2. Alabama 10-3. So like it looks drastically different where Clemson's not on here at all. Right. Ohio State's not on here at all. Georgia's 8-4.
Yeah.
Georgia's 8-4. Alabama was 10-3. But Alabama started the season 20th in the polls that year. And what's the other team that we're missing from this collective five?
LSU.
LSU is not ranked as well, and they dropped out of the rankings. Actually, they might not have ever been ranked.
So when you look back, we see a really different landscape. I wonder if maybe the better question is the dynamics of today. When we look at this in 20 years, let's say we take the poll in whatever it was in the year, what is this, 2019, and when you and I are recording Draft Dudes going into 2040, are we going to look at this list and be like, oh, man, it's been this long reign of these five teams, or is it going to be a new landscape again?
I think it'll shift. I think that's just kind of – you kind of get natural life cycles. Now, I think Clemson has a great chance to still be there because of how young Dabo is, right? And where is he ever going to leave unless, like, Nick Saban retires and he wants to go back to Alabama?
Right.
Like, that's the only feasible way. Dabo's either going to leave for the NFL or he's going to leave for Alabama or he's going to stay at Clemson. And with what he's got cooking at Clemson, you know, he could be that next coach that is on, like, the all-time wins list.
Yeah. Yeah.
And push himself in there. But that means he's got to stay there. And that would mean 20 years from now, Clemson will still be there. Alabama, I think the program is positioned to perennially win 10 games. But what does it look like after Nick Saban leaves? Who does Alabama have coach the team?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I mean, what's interesting, though, is we've seen a lot of turnover. Like, think Bob Stoops to Lincoln Riley, Urban Meyer to Ryan Day. Now it's Chris Peterson to Jimmy Lake. You know, we've seen this, right? We've seen big time coaches move on and then the next guy comes in and not all of those books are written, but Oklahoma and Ohio State are in the playoffs this year. You know, so I think it's not easy to identify that right now, but Alabama's going to get whoever the hell they want to replace Nick Saban.
Right.
And maybe that is Dabo.
But I don't think, unless it is Dabo, I mean, this is obviously a very difficult projection to make, but it's hard to see whoever comes in here next sustaining the level of greatness that we've seen from what Nick Saban's Alabama has looked like. You know, that it just, it doesn't happen. You don't see coaches win. He's lost four home games in 10 years.
Yeah, crazy stuff. Well, maybe that's the big thing for Nick Saban next, right? I think Saban's going to coach a bit more. You know, I mean, I've always been a big kind of somebody very interested in Nick Saban. So I watch a lot of videos and read a lot of stuff about him. And I don't feel like the end's imminent for Nick, but maybe that's kind of the part of his legacy that will mean something to him, is identifying that successor and kind of putting that path together, because we've seen good coaches leave, and we've kind of seen succession plans already in place. And that's been the thing with Alabama. Every coordinator that he gets that winds up being worth a damn is a head coach somewhere, right? I mean, just how many coaches have been plucked out of there? And Kirby Smart and Jeremy Pruitt and Mike Locklessly and Lane Kiffin. I mean, whoever's decent, they get a job somewhere else. And so that's going to be the big thing for me in terms of when he does leave, what has he done to make sure that the pieces don't fall apart once he retires?
Right. So I think you'll see a blend. I think all of the programs that are at the top of the mountain right now will continue to be successful programs, but it's hard to envision all of them being the programs, because, you know, the 90s was Tennessee and Notre Dame had a little run there.
Nebraska.
And then into the 2000s, it was more Miami, Virginia Tech.
Florida State deserves some recognition in this range.
Florida State.
But how do those teams get there?
And then you start seeing
do you see that turning? Do you see those teams coming back higher to prominence? Yeah, that's what it has to be.
No, I think there's always going to be an elite in college football. I think that's inevitable. And this generation's elite is the five teams that we're spotlighting right now. But a handful of teams are going to make home run program changing hires that is going to, over the course of the next decade, position them to make that next leap. And then the ones that are in the elite now are going to see a coaching change where you just can't quite have that magic component that guy who led you to prominence was able to provide you. And you'll still be a successful program because you're going to be living off of all the success that was there. It's like what Florida State with Bobby Bowden, and then Jimbo Fisher's there, and they're still good, and they still had success, and they won a national championship in 2015. But like, look at them now. You know, it's nothing happens overnight. There's a gradual build up to that elite status, and then there's a slow taper on the back end of it, where some of these programs like Tennessee with Phil Fulmer, Virginia Tech with Justin Fuente, Florida State with Bobby Bowden into Jimbo Fisher and Willie Taggart, it's a slow taper. And then when you bottom out, it's ugly before you start to bounce back.
When you factor into this equation the inevitable changes that are going to come, whether it's athletes receiving a payment, or the ability for them to, you know, profit off their own likeness in different ways legally, how do you think that factors into college football parity?
I think it helps.
You do?
Because I think a lot of the behind the scenes dealings, the kind of ugly underbelly to recruiting, right? I think that's a big factor that once players are able to get their own likeness and they're able to kind of control their own destiny in that front, I think they'll be more interested in markets than they are programs or opportunities and amenities, if that makes sense.
I wish I had some data to give you, but one thing that I do as part of my process in evaluating players and stuff is I will take a peek at their social media. And so one thing that I always notice is like, the discrepancy in followers based on big time athletes at certain schools. So like I'm doing this on the fly. So this could blow up into my face.
can't wait. If it does, this will be the one time I actually edit it out to help you out.
Nope, it worked out perfectly. Here it is. This worked out absolutely perfectly. AJ Epenesa, a fine prospect, the first round prospect.
He's probably got 2,000 followers.
He has 8,348 followers on Twitter, which I thought it's a little more than I expected. Okay. Terrell Lewis, who's been, I don't know, below average probably when you look at the scope of his career. 28,000 followers because he's the same player at Alabama. Yeah, to me, like, I don't think it helps it at all. I think that it does nothing but put you in those markets where you matter as a football player. And those
here,
go ahead.
Here's the perfect example. AJ Epenesa has how many?
8,348.
And this dude is a first round lock in the 2020 NFL draft if he wants to come out, right?
Yep.
Jalen Phillips, five-star recruit to UCLA, who played an amazing five games and then got hurt and had trouble getting on the same page with the coaching staff and then transfers to Miami. 11-5. Now, Jalen does some music-type content that he creates, so that probably helps him. But that's an example of, like, once athletes are able to monetize their likeness based on their status as athletes, right? I think you'll see much more willingness from players to go to metro markets for visibility. It's not going to help the Iowas and the Wisconsins of the world ever. It's inevitable. I think those programs in the heart of the country are at a great disadvantage because there's so few areas and regions where you can create and cultivate exposure for yourself. So I think it shifts from what's the best program for me to spotlight myself to what's the best region or area of the country that I can spotlight myself once monetization comes into play.
Bryce Hall, 3,000 followers. Who would be a fun equivalent to look up?
Christian Fulton.
18,800.
No, granted, Fulton's a better prospect, but right, well, not Stingley. What's Stingley got as a freshman?
Let's see.
23-2.
Derek Stingley, does he even have
23-2?
You got it. 23-2. Yeah.
He's got 20,000 more followers than Bryce Hall.
If Derek Stingley played at Virginia and had the same season, how many would he have? 1,200?
3,000. 3,000, like Bryce Hall had.
Right, because he had Bryce Hall's season last year in some ways, you know?
I think he's a little better than Bryce
Hall. Right, even he was a junior, and I get a true Friday. That wasn't a slam dunk, but like,
no.
I don't know, man. I think it'll come down to, because you're a starting cornerback at LSU, it's going to be better for your marketability than being a starting quarterback at Virginia.
Right. Well, I think that's part of monetization's not possible right now. So what it does for your brand to play on a premier platform, that eventually will provide you with monetary value because of visibility purposes, you know?
Yeah.
So that's a really interesting point that you made about how this will shift in the coming years as more states become receptive to this, and inevitably the NCAA is going to have to make a change.
Well, it is National Signing Day. It doesn't feel like it, but it is, and so it'll be interesting to see how that all unfolds. I'm always anxious to look at the recruiting rankings and those types of things, but we'll see if anyone sneaks up and steals some recruits. Who knows?
All right, Joe. I got something to talk to you about before we sign off here.
All right.
I'm going to name a couple prospects, and I want you to make a prediction on when they will announce their intentions for declaring or not declaring.
On when?
Yes.
Okay.
How close we are and what they decide.
Okay. And what's the deadline? Like the 12th or something?
I think it's the 17th, 16th or 17th.
All right. January.
Of January.
Okay.
Yes. So not yesterday. Chase Young, Ohio State.
Oh, that's coming after Ohio State's done playing football games.
And what does he decide?
Oh, he's coming out, right?
Well, I mean, I don't know. He just told TMZ otherwise. So I'm not assuming anything. I want you to. All right. Tua Tagovailoa, quarterback, Alabama.
He's going to make his decision no sooner than 5 days before the deadline.
You think he's going to milk it out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a long
one. I personally would not be surprised if he's got a doctor's appointment 2 days before the deadline and he gets some feedback that kind of just gives him affirmation on what would be best for based on what his medical status looks like.
Big collection of data.
Yeah, it'd be smart, you know, to maximize the amount of information that you have by taking all of the time available to you as your body heals.
Yeah.
Tristan Wirfs, offensive tackle from Iowa.
It'll be announced within hours of Iowa completing their bowl game.
Okay, so you think that one's also on the back? How about DeAndre Swift, who was reported to be in, and then, actually, the reporter who said that he was in, yesterday.
Let me just say that I hate that stuff. I mean, you and I have both we get information on guys that are going to come out and declare and not declare, but we could put a tweet out there and get all kinds of retweets and break news. I've always kind of taken the stance that that's not my information to share. You know, that's a big significant moment in their personal lives that they've made and that they deserve the opportunity to make that announcement. And so, you know, you really hate to see this and you do every year. There's multiple times every year where somebody gets, you know, just kind of jumps the gun on this stuff and I really hate it. So with that said, DeAndre Swift said it'll be after the bowl game and I trust that it'll be after the bowl game.
Curtis Weaver, Boise State.
He's coming, right? You think there's any chance he stays?
I don't think he's a three-time All-American. Like,
well, what more does he have to prove at Boise State, right? Like, he had a good year. That could be one that we see pretty soon, and he winds up not playing in the bowl game.
Well, and that's what I'm starting to transition to with these last few names is guys that it's like your team doesn't have – you've got a bowl game to play, but it's not – national title implications.
Yeah.
You know, KJ Hamler, wide receiver, Penn State.
Oh, I think he's coming, right? I could see him playing in the bowl game.
Is Gross Matos is playing in the game, right?
I don't remember, but he's in.
He's already declared, yeah.
There's somebody significant. Oh, it's Derek Brown. Derek Brown's playing. Could you imagine his ass not playing? Oh, man, you know he just loves it. That you just watch that guy play, and you know he's loving every second of playing ball. Just
beating the tar out of
Jesus,
people.
Jesus, man. Imagine he's that so guy fun. Missing a chance to play a football game. It won't happen.
It's so fun, man. Dylan Moses.
What's he waiting for, right? I guess I'm a little concerned that he hasn't already. You know?
It's peculiar that he hasn't because you'd assume, well, he had a knee injury. He would have 12 months of recovery before the start of his rookie season. He ain't going to be playing in a bowl game. Yeah. Not that Alabama's playing in the college football playoff this year anyway. So that was one that stood out to me as kind of peculiar that we haven't gotten any feedback on him yet.
Wish I had some names to throw at you, man. You're just throwing me here.
Yeah, I sat on this. I didn't even tell you in the pre-show.
Yeah, appreciate that, man.
Just going to throw some haymakers at you.
Yeah, I was like, hey, let's get into these things. We give you a chance to collect your thoughts, and you blitz me with some names here, man.
I've got one more name.
Okay.
Paulson Adebo.
Man, he went – you see McShay's mock had him going to, like, Oakland at, like, number 12.
Well – that makes sense based on the style of defenders that Oakland was going after last year. I could see why McShay slotted that.
He ain't a senior. I mean, they went after seniors.
Right, but the style of play that they provided with Crosby and Farrell and Abram, just physical dudes. Jacobs on the offensive side of the ball.
Yeah.
They love physical guys. And if you want to talk about physical corners, Adebo's about as physical as you can get.
I'm giving you some names.
No, we're done here.
No, you're getting two names for me. Two. I want two.
Joe, we're at 34 minutes. Yeah, you've already expired.
Two.
Okay, go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you. First one, Jonathan Taylor.
Man, well, I think he's playing in the bowl game. Strikes me as a Derrick Brown type in that regard. And Jonathan Taylor, right now, if I was Wisconsin, I would let Jonathan Taylor carry the ball on every single play.
You want that record more than Jonathan Taylor does, I think.
Probably. Jonathan Taylor has 6,080 yards in three seasons, Joe. Now, granted, he's done that on 905 carries in three seasons over the course of 40 football games. But what's the record?
For who?
Rushing yards.
Oh, I don't remember. This has been your talking point for 6 months now.
All right, hold on. Danelle Pumphrey, my producer's got it right here. Taylor has 6,080 yards. Danelle Pumphrey currently holds the official record, and it gave me the freaking NFL one where he had five carries. 6,405.
Yeah, that's a ton.
So Jonathan Taylor needs 326 yards to set the rushing record.
If he wouldn't have had, he had some real slow games midseason. That
The Ohio State game, the first Ohio State game, Michigan killed him State. Because it, yeah, he had like 40 yards against Ohio State, 52 yards against Ohio State, and he had 80 yards against Michigan State. He had 76 against Minnesota.
Yeah, well, I remember kind of comparing J.K. Dobbins, and like J.K. Dobbins like against Michigan State was like over 200.
Yeah.
Here's my other guy, Marvin Wilson, defensive tackle, Florida State.
Florida State's playing in like the Dollar General Bowl, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the bowl games they play in these days.
The Arby's.
And he's hurt. Bowl. Remember, he's hurt. He's injured.
I think he'll declare before the end of the year.
But you think he's in?
Yeah. He had a great year this year.
Yeah. Hand injury.
Hand injury.
Yeah.
Which is good. November. It's no injury is good, but at least a hand injury, it's like,
you're it's not better gonna than lose a knee. Yeah, you're not going to lose your wind over that.
Right. You sit here. We can, you know, duct tape the bar to your club, and you can go like bench press in the gym with it and stuff. So
he had surgery on his hand. What kind of surgeries do you have in your hand?
I don't know.
Maybe
he had a broken metatarsal.
Yeah, see, I knew you would drop a nice medical term I've never heard of there. And thank you.
New vocabulary for Joe. Yeah. Typically reserved for takes on takes, yeah, but you got it on Water Cooler Wednesday.
It's
there
been
you
a
go.
While, though. Nobody's giving me new vocabulary. Let's pick that up for next week's takes on takes.
Metatarsals are kind of the base bones in the palm of your hand.
Thank you.
That allow you to have such a pliable range of motion.
I know pliable. Your hands. I know pliable.
Well, good. Good. Well, you also know we're going to be back tomorrow then, too.
See.
What are we doing tomorrow?
Something great.
So come back and find out exactly what something great is. By the way, we did get two people say that they would be receptive to Justin Herbert being on their team.
There was many, many more, sir. Many, many more.
Oh, well, people just tweet at you then.
No, your Twitter settings, sir.
Oh, right.
On yourself.
No, I changed my Twitter settings because if you don't follow me, I'm not getting notifications that you tweet me anymore.
Right. So you're not seeing a lot of these, and a lot of Bears fans were quite interested in Herbert, and some Colts fans and some Chargers fans we heard from.
I got one Broncos too.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw that. That was interesting. Okay. Then
But we did want to give that follow up as it came to me here at the end, because we can't think of anybody that wants Justin Herbert. We got some folks lining up for him now. Right. So in the mentions, which is good. It's good. We want to find the market for all these guys. Kyle Crabb signing off with Joe Marino. Thanks as always for listening to Draft News. Come back and see us again tomorrow.